Did you all have a nice Thanksgiving? Did you? Well, I hope that in your home, the last of the turkey has been used up by now. But I thought, you know, we need a little injection of culture in this place. So I want you to relax, and I'm going to share with you a poetic tribute to Thanksgiving. Are you ready? 'Twas the night of Thanksgiving, but I just couldn't sleep. I tried counting backwards. I tried counting sheep. The leftovers beckoned, the dark meat and white. But I fought the temptation with all of my might. Tossing and turning with anticipation, the thought of a snack became infatuation. So I raced to the kitchen, flung open the door, gazed at the fridge, full of goodies galore. I gobbled up turkey and buttered potatoes, pickles and carrots, beets and tomatoes. I felt myself swelling so plump and so round, till all of a sudden I rose off the ground. I crashed through the ceiling and floated into the sky with a mouthful of pudding and a handful of pie. But I managed to yell as I soared past the trees, "Happy eating to all. Pass the cranberries, please." Isn't that culturally wonderful? I don't know. Thanksgiving, we just had it. A feast, a festival, if you like, a celebration of family and friends and all things related to gluttony. Thanksgiving, tables loaded with turkey and gravy and potatoes and stuffing and veggies and, of course, oh, yum, 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 pumpkin pie, apple pie if you prefer. Now, I realize that some of our fellow Canadians, especially those newer to Canada, and maybe even perhaps parts of our church family, can find this whole Thanksgiving thing a bit foreign. Especially when it comes from a culture of this English custom of eating our big roasted bird. The good news is, however, that even if Thanksgiving is a foreign concept to you, every culture on this planet knows what banquets and feasts are all about. The reasons for celebrating and the type of food may change from culture to culture, but a feast is a feast, right? This is especially true when it comes to a wedding feast. I know of no culture in this world, that I've heard of anyway, that chooses to have a time of fasting to go with a wedding. I don't know of any. Instead, almost every culture that I know of opts for a wedding feast or celebration. So isn't it interesting to you that Jesus compares our relationship with God to a wedding feast? And not just any wedding feast, folks, but a huge celebration of a great king whose son was getting married. The best I could come up with, think of it as kind of a Palestinian version of Prince William and Kate's wedding, you know. Jesus is saying then that the kingdom of God is one great big celebratory party. Now, I'm pretty sure that this may come as a surprise to some people who behave both in word and in attitude that the kingdom of God is more like a funeral. Lowell Stryker reveals this when he writes about his dear wife who was asked to host the monthly meeting of the Women's Fellowship. Instead of their planned discussion about world missions, the ladies then spent the time together, or most of the time together, chatting about their arthritic pains. They dwelt with their pains. They talked about their children's health issues, their grandchildren's tonsils and adenoids, their husbands' enlarged prostates, slipped discs and weak knees and weak hearts. When his wife returned home, he asked, how'd the meeting go? She said, it was hardly much of a study in missions as it was an organ recital. We need to pay really close attention to the fact that Jesus doesn't paint a picture of God's kingdom as being a collection of people who are beaten down by life. Instead, he talks about a banquet. He talks about a great big party. Now, what may also surprise you to learn is that this parable is not symbolic about heaven. The parable was never to be used to encourage people to look forward to dying and then going to heaven. This parable is the last of three parables that Jesus addressed directly to the Pharisees. And it speaks symbolically of the nature of our Christian life here on earth. The Christian life, my friends, is an invitation to joy and excitement and celebration. And this does seem often to be so counter to what we experience in our faith journey, doesn't it? The purpose of the parable is to ensure that we experience life with God like a party, not like the Pharisees did, who came off as bad, like their faith was a burden or that they were at a funeral. To the Pharisees, faith was work. It was an onerous chore. It was demanding piety and sober reflection. In fact, one of the reasons that they really despised Jesus was that everyone who came to him seemed to be happy. Jesus' presence lifted their spirits. Remember Palm Sunday? However, when it comes to God's invitation to join this grand celebration, we are, as the Pharisees were, our own worst enemies. The parable talks about how we deliberately miss out on the fullness of joy that's offered to us. In fact, there's more than one way you can miss out on the very best thing that you can ever receive in your life. The parable reveals to us three ways that we reject God's offer. The first way we miss the banquet is being apathetic about it. When the king sent out his wonderful invitation, verse 5 tells us that people just simply ignored it. They just had other things to do. Some went off to work in fields, others to other business opportunities. They simply paid no attention to what was being offered to them. They just don't hear God's offer. Therefore, they don't respond because they don't care to listen. Their lives are more focused on worldly matters like work or accumulating possessions. They would rather choose to focus and find meaning in their lives in the mundane aspects of life. No wonder King Solomon in Ecclesiastes chapter 2 verses 17 to 23 says this. So now I hate life because everything done here under the sun is so irrational. Everything is meaningless, like chasing the wind. So what do people get for all their hard work? Their days of labor are filled with pain and grief. Even at night, they cannot rest. It is all meaningless. But we read on, and there are people who respond to God's invitation with hostility. Verse 6 says that the king sent servants out, and those servants were seized by the people being invited. Some were terribly mistreated, others were killed. He's referring to the prophets here, by the way. It's hard to fathom this level of hostility to a gracious invitation. It would be kind of akin to a friend saying, hey, why don't you come over for dinner, and then we slug them in the face. No excuse given, just outright hostility. You get invited to this amazing party where you can eat and drink all you want and you don't have to pay a dime, and some people respond by killing the messenger. Another way of stating this is to say that some people respond to God's invitation by becoming belligerent. Belligerent means being openly hostile and aggressive. One of the things that churches do from time to time, I myself have received several in the mail over the years, is that People, churches will send out invitations to come and visit their church or to some program, right? You've seen them. Reverend Steve May's church sent out a mailing of about 15,000 invitations to come and visit their church. In the following few weeks, about 100 people responded to receive that, came in response to that invitation that they had sent out. That means 14,900 decided, well, we're not going to go for a variety of reasons. What is interesting, though, Reverend May writes, is that half a dozen people actually called up the church to complain about receiving the brochure. Some angrily complained that they never wanted to hear from the church again, and further stated that they are against everything the church stands for. It's amazing that these few people would take the time to call in with their hostility to a simple invitation. But it makes you wonder, Reverend May writes, whether they get a flyer from Radio Shack, do they call the head office and complain? Probably not. Another person reports that he worked at a factory, and one night he left his Bible that he used to read during his breaks, and when he came back to the lunchroom to retrieve it, he found someone had thrown it in the garbage. Do you think someone would have done that with any other book? Probably not. Some people do respond to the invitation to God's banquet with anger and resentment, and it's really hard for us to understand this. Maybe they respond this way because, well, they had a bad experience with religion. We've heard that before. Maybe they met a preacher they didn't like, or they went to a religious school when they were young and they got their knuckles wrapped continually. Maybe they went to church at one time and the people were not friendly. I mean, who really knows? All we know is that God offers a life of joy and peace, and some people respond to it with anger and hostility. And then there are those who are just simply uncooperative. This is the part of the parable that our modern ears may not fully appreciate. The king's servants had brought in all kinds of people to the feast, but one man, did you see that? He wasn't wearing wedding clothes. And the king asked the man how he got into the feast dressed the way he was. The man had no answer, so the king ordered his servants to bind him up and throw him outside into the darkness. What in the world do you think that means? This guy gets invited to a wedding at the very last minute, and he gets tossed out for not wearing a tuxedo. It doesn't seem very fair, does it? Do you know, actually, this is true, that there are some strict Christians out there who use this verse to try and prove that men should wear suits and ladies to wear dresses on Sunday when they come to church. They argue if we don't wear our Sunday best or our Sunday go meeting clothes, God doesn't want us at church. But that's not Jesus' point at all. We're not even close to it there. You see, in Jesus' day, it was common practice for the host of a wedding banquet to provide wedding clothes for his guests. It's kind of like, you know, when you go to a fancy restaurant where it says on the big sign at the door, well, men have to wear a dinner jacket. Have you seen places like that? And it so happens that you've arrived at the restaurant without one. And they may have some spare jackets laying around. They're often very ugly, by the way. Spare jackets lying around that you can borrow while you have your dinner. So this is not a case of a man who's too poor to own very nice clothes to wear. Rather, it's the case of a proud man who wouldn't show proper respect. Yes, he came to the banquet, but he wasn't willing to cooperate. He came to the banquet wearing his working clothes, not his wedding duds. He wanted to come to the feast, but he didn't want to commit fully to the process. Still happens today, lots of times. It is how many people miss out on God's purpose for their lives. Yes, they may come to church every week, but they never really engage themselves in God's kingdom. On the surface, our lives can look really respectable. They may be the ones who wear the suits and the dresses. Maybe they serve on church boards or charitable boards. Maybe they have lots of Christian books at home or music on their shelves, but their hearts remain far from God. They simply are not serious about fully committing to the party God's offering them. Now, that's a very serious issue for those running ministries, not only here in our fellowship, but in all churches everywhere. We, you and I, as a fellowship, we spend enormous amounts of time trying innovative things to draw people into church circles, only to discover that they're only going to go so far. People may join a church softball team, right? They send their kids to our programs. They join a drama group or choirs, but there's no interest, or their interest in God never goes beyond the appetizer that initially drew them. Too many people are attracted to the services offered by a church, but never commit to taking the whole banquet. Now, and you can guess, it's enormously frustrating for ministry leaders, but it's a fact of life. Now, I realize that I may not be talking to people today who are apathetic or are hostile to God, but boy, I bet you're wondering about that third category. I know I am. People who want to come to the banquet, but they really don't want to put on the wedding clothes. You want to attend, but you don't want to cooperate. You just don't want to commit. In so doing, you are rejecting God's invitation. You're missing out on God's purpose for your life. Symbolically, wearing the wedding clothes means approaching God with a spirit of reverence, a spirit of respect, a spirit of cooperation, and a spirit of commitment. You're saying to God, God, I want to be on your team, and I'm going to be a team player. There is more than one way to miss out on this banquet. But there's only one way to get in. It's with a full-on, no-holds-barred commitment to God. Now, there's also something very beautiful in this parable that I want you to see. Did you notice that the call of God on our lives is not based on our past? Did you notice that? When people would not respond to the king's invitation, he expanded the scope of his invitation. He said to his servants, go out into the street corners, invite all the people that you find. So the servants went out into the streets, into the alleyways. They gathered all the people they could find, both good and bad, and the wedding hall was filled with guests. Did you notice that? Good and bad. The old saying is true. The church is not a museum for saints, by the way. It's a hospital for sinners. When we open the doors of this place and the hearts of our community, we do not say, oh, wait a minute. All of the holy people, all of the righteous people, all of the good people are welcome here, but nobody else. We don't ever say that. Or at least we shouldn't. When we open the doors and open our hearts to the community, we should be saying, everyone is welcome. Doesn't matter who you are, you will be received and God will receive you. And God has extended his gracious invitation to the highways and byways, to those whose clothes may not be completely clean. Why? Because once you come to the banquet, he'll clean you up. He'll put fine new clothes on you. And some people may think, well, it's too late for me. I've messed up too much in my life. God will never have anything to do with me now. Don't you dare believe that. Not even for a second. Nothing could be further from the truth. God issues his invitation to everyone, the good and the bad. If you're not clean, he'll make you clean. If you're not worthy, he'll make you worthy. The fact is, none of us is really worthy. We all need his grace, don't we? Finally, I need to tell you that your response to God's call determines your future. In other words, it's entirely up to you. Your place at the banquet can only be filled when you decide to come and participate fully. So how will you respond? Will you respond with apathy, with passion, with hostility or joy, with a non-cooperative attitude, or with a no-holds-barred level of commitment? How will you respond? A king has issued an invitation to his banquet. Your past doesn't matter, but your future certainly does. And your future is determined by the decision you make, even make today, about God's invitation.